Reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule, and massive apologies for the mild hiatus between the last episode, 196, with our tantric lighting director, Buzz, and today's wonderful episode with a guest that I've been trying to get on for a wee while now. It is the mighty Mr. Mick Wilson, who is the editor of DJ Magazine. He's also been a label boss. He's also part studio owner of an amazing music studio here at the Hub, where we're actually sitting right now, perched upon a sofa, barefoot, with an actual carpet underneath our titties, which is incredible and very rare in Ibiza. We don't really do carpets on this island. But last but not least is my favourite title. He's an ex-partner or head partner of gear at Aid, which is a great title, really. How did that come about? How did you get to be head of gear?
Actually, that sounds so wrong, doesn't it?
It just sounds so right.
Yeah, I'm still doing it.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, ADE, Amsterdam Dance Event. Basically, my work with DJ Mag as the tech editor sees me speaking with so many different manufacturers, from established to bespoke to startups, and that sort of wealth of knowledge and sort of day-to-day interaction was what AD were looking for. I think just before COVID, when they wanted to refresh the lab, AD split into two sections: Pro, which is for established artists, musicians, music industry people, and Lab, which is generally for the next generation of music industry professional. 16 to 25 is sort of the ideal target group, then 25 to 35, then 35 to infinity. Anyone's interested in technology and music and creation. So Minder, who is was one of the CEOs, and he also was the CEO at Spinning. We've done many panels and workshops and masterclasses and, you know, fireside chats, and he's another tech head. And he's like, you know these people, you know pretty much everyone who we need to speak to, who we want to have in our space. Would you like to come and be head of our brand technologies? I can't even remember what the title is.
Head of gear,
yeah.
That's what it says on your LinkedIn. Yeah. It sounds very professional.
My LinkedIn actually needs an update.
It needs a tickle.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. Head of brand partnerships, head of music technology brand partnerships, something like that. I'm going to have to make up another.
Hasn't got
title.
Quite the same ring to it, I'm afraid.
Has it? Yeah. I'll make up these titles. So he said to me, come on board. And I was like, yeah, it sounds really good. ADs, it's a global institution. It's been around for so many years, and it's a celebration of electronic music culture across all avenues, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing. So I was quite chuffed and excited to be part of that, and to bring across some knowledge and expertise and the relationships that I'd crafted to try and refresh the lab side of things and the brand partnerships and the music tech partnerships, and just to have some fun.
I've actually never been, and this is going to be my first ever ADE this year. I've got it in my diary. I've booked some accommodation, which was cheap as chips on Airbnb, probably the last available property. I don't know how close it is to all of the events, but I'm quite excited. I feel like a proper little amateur ready to set out on a big adventure.
Well, the good thing about Amsterdam is actually quite a small city. It's a big city, but it's a small city, so you can get around it on a bicycle so easily. You know, I love just getting a bike and cycling around, so, you know, I think that's part of the fun of AD as well, because the whole city's immersed in it. You know, it's weird, because you'd think London would have something like that, and it doesn't. But London also has five or six things going on. Every night there's a workshop, there's a panel, there's a talk across the board about cultural, electronic music culture, youth culture, everything. Now, the whole city gets involved, and for that week, a global audience descends on Amsterdam. And Amsterdam, you know, it's quite an international, well, everybody knows it's an international city anyway. So I think you're going to have a lot of fun.
I think that's a given, actually. I've got a sneaky suspicion.
I think so. Do you know what? I think before we started, we said, let's have some fun. And so far, we've mentioned fun 3 or 4 times in this one.
Well, it does tend to happen on the Reset Rebel, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it, really, I think. And as I said, for me, I love it. Unfortunately, because I'm sort of semi-working, I don't really sort of get to dip my toes into everything. But it's what I like is discovery. That's when I first moved to Ibiza, or first came to Ibiza many years ago. It was about discovery, discovering new music, discovering a new scene. And during ADE, and especially ADE, I get to discover new things, new sounds, new music, new artists. You know, there's always something new to pick up on, and you just wander around. And some places, you not get stale, but they're tied in. Berlin's Berlin. Everyone knows Berlin. And yes, you can discover new stuff, but you walk around, it's more of the same. But for this week in Amsterdam at ADE, there's so many great things to find and interesting things. And as I said, and even from the cultural side of things as well, so which ties into the whole electronic music scene. It's bringing the community together. Mm. So, yes, it's a great week.
I literally haven't been to Amsterdam since my raving days, and when I very, very, very first got into electronic music, I would say, was when I was at uni. And in my second year, I went to live in a little town in the north called Tilburg to study at the Academy for Journalists. So it was like all these like young students, sort of about 19 years of age, studying to put this like magazine together about European politics. And basically, we failed miserably because we discovered nightclubbing. And I went to this club called Roxy in Amsterdam, which is now apparently burnt down. But we had to like knock on the door and like, a little shutter opened and then someone peered over the top and I was absolutely bricking it that I wasn't going to get in. And they let me in. And it was the first night and Eric E was playing and I literally haven't been back to Amsterdam since then.
I can imagine you all failed. It sounds like the heyday of it all as well.
It was a disaster. I was head of photography, luckily.
Do you know what? It would have been quite interesting if a magazine was music related. I think it's all the past with flying colours.
It should have been, really. I mean, you know, that's what you do now. I mean, you basically just made that model up.
Yeah, it's that's been the
goal. How's that working out for you?
Do you know what? I'm old now. It's like, you need to go there, you need to go here, you need to go there. And I'm like, oh, do I have to?
You'd love it.
Yeah. Do you know what? It was funny. I was moaning about it. I moaned about an invitation to go somewhere to check out a club, and someone reminded me, what are you doing? You know, you're paid. This is a job. You're paid to go out and have fun. So what are you going on about? And it dawned, like, oh, yeah, I am actually, aren't I? So, yes, I still love it. But I suppose in terms of the fact that as you mature and you grow wiser, I'm not saying older, wiser, these things become a job. Whereas when we started, it was just fun and running around and trying to get away with things and being as carefree and silly as possible. There's an element of the job needs to be done. But yeah, it's still great, still fun. So in terms of when you said the editor of DJ Mag, I'm the editor of DJ Mag Ibiza. Took me a long time to sort of get my head round to, okay, I'll do it. And I'm the tech editor of DJ Mag UK Global. And that's been 15, 16 years. I thought it was 10 years, but everything I think I say stops at 10 years. And then I realised, well, actually, it's longer than that. It's 15, 16 years. So, both great positions.
How did you start out as a journalist before we get into that?
Well, officially, I've had no sort of educational training as a journalist. However, I started off as a DJ at the age of 14, and that was it. And that's been basically what I've been doing ever since, DJing and making music. So
you were younger than Danny Tanagra, who started at 16 and who I interviewed the other week and you came to watch.
Yeah, top chumps.
You basically won that one.
Yeah, I have indeed. Yeah, do you know what the irony was? My mum bought me these decks. I was into tape to tape, stopping, starting tape, mixing from many, many years. And my mum bought me decks to keep me off the streets, which was the irony because it just meant I was out on the streets a lot longer. I suppose it kept me off the streets in one respect, but
threw you right back out in another.
Yeah, exactly. So that started at 14. The passion started then. And then that was on the cusp of the rave scene, which kicked off 88, 89. So I was within that movement. And that carried on all the way through the 2000s and beyond. And from that, being part of that scene, I said, with Danny Tenaglia and with Sasha's of the World and the Long Garniers and some of the Detroit boys and, you know, a whole wealth of DJs come through, like Fabio and Grievewad. It was such a more connected, close... Actually, it's kind of weird because it was a more connected scene because there wasn't this thing about genres. You'd go and you'd hear music, you know, electronic music, and you'd hear whatever. So it was nice to be part of that wave. And my friend at the time, she was the editor of DJ Mag, long time editor. We were just talking and partying. I did little bits of writing for other magazines, which I won't mention because some of them are competitors, and little fanzines and stuff. And I liked writing. I think it's the creative element which sat nicely alongside the music side of things and also the creative side of things. So she said, do you want to do it? And she tricked me out. She said, do you want to do some a little few things for the mag around the technology side? And I was like, that sounds right on my street. I'll sit in studios all day long. I'll play music. I'll tinker around with kit. Yeah, why not? So I said, yes. That was 16 years ago. And basically, it then turned out it actually wasn't just a page or two. It was like, you need to revamp the whole section. And you're going to be the editor for the tech section. I thought, oh, okay. So that's how that all happened. But yeah, I suppose just having that element of creative interest and always like writing. And one of the things as DJs, which we still have to do, is comment on records. You get the promos and stuff like that. So one of the things is writing reviews for records. Again, for magazines, for various different magazines. And a lot of our friends who were in the industry as well, they were editors of the other magazines as well, which I will not mention. Mixed Mag, Music, everything that was around at the time. So there was this community of us who were, I suppose, on the creative edge, from the DJs to the writers to the journalists. So we all used to interact. So I think that's where that sort of side of things came in. It's like, this sits nicely in tandem with what I do, sitting in the studio and talking to friends about it. Even when you're just like, oh, what are you using, what are you doing, and having those conversations. And it's, I think that is an extension of that. And what we try and capture is, as I said, it's a conversation. So instead of being too technical, you've got some great publications out there like Sound and Sound, which are very in-depth in the way they just talk about technology. My angle was, there's a lot of people coming in, especially on the DJ side of things, who actually haven't got a clue. So let's make it easy enough to digest, but not too simple so it dumbs it down. And a case of also, instead of just talking about the kit and the equipment and just, oh, it's got loads of black knobs on sliders, it's like, let's bring the artists in so people can relate. So they're like, oh, I like this artist. How do they use it? Or how do they use it differently? Or how I can use it within what I want to do? And from that, we started to develop this sort of like open community again. And people, so say it was pre all the internet tutorials. So it was a way for people to like, oh yeah, so-and-so uses this kit and they make this sort of music, so we need to use that kit. And then it just spread like that, really. So yeah. Did I digest? Diverse. I went off on one, didn't I? On a tangent, I think. But basically, yeah. So, yeah.
That's how you became a journalist.
Yeah, basically.
You're a bit of a tech head. I noticed a bit of a geek in you.
Yeah. Do you know what? When I was a kid, I used to... it's really geeky. I used to, because I couldn't afford synthesizers at the time, I used to write letters to Roland and Korg and said, I'd lost my manuals, can you send me them? And they used to send me the manuals in the post. And
I thought you were going to say Jim will fix it then.
Oh, Jesus Christ. In hindsight, I'm glad I didn't.
But, so am I.
You know what I mean? So they used to send over these manuals and I'd sit there reading and think, oh, wow, this is how you make this sound, or this is how you do that. And then I used to lie to these industry magazines and say, listen, I'm a producer and make up studio names. Actually, some of the studio names actually did exist. So I work here. Can you put me on your mailing list? And they'd send me free copies of their industry magazines and stuff. So, yeah, so I thought I was cool. But thinking about it, yeah, it was quite geeky shit that I was in. Oh, did I swear? quite geeky stuff I was into then.
I like geeks. They're my favourite kind of people at the moment. I've been interviewing a lot of them. But actually, you came to my attention. I mean, obviously, I'd met you here around the hub, but when you were doing an interview with another absolute geek, Stimming, in Las Dalias at Akasha, actually. And it was kind of like live on air on Sonica. But it was the first time I'd stepped into Akasha when the lights were on. It, you know, it still smelt fairly fresh-ish, but it was before anyone was actually in there sort of partying or, you know, boozing heavily or getting up to mischief. And it was quite weird really in some ways, but it was amazing to hear that album unpacked and unpicked track by track, and with him sort of, you know, going through each and every element of the way he put that together. And it, handily enough, it happened to be right before I was about to interview him for my other podcast, Beatweller, and it really helped me. But I thought you did such an amazing job. I was very inspired by your style and the way you put the questions together and the kind of interaction between the two of you. And I'd never seen anybody do that in Ibiza before. And it was like, why is there not more of this going on? It's just such a great idea.
Thank you. Do you know what, I agree with you. And many years ago, my friends used to put on the Red Bull Music Academies and used to have these chats and bring in some really established musicians and artists. And that's what it was. We had a turntable in front of them, just having a conversation, going through the music, and then talking about the process. With that, it's, you can get really into it and really techy and really geeky, and it was great chatting to Stimming about it. But then also the other thing is to remember, some of the audience, whilst a lot of them will be there because they know what they're getting into, some of them are just there out of curiosity. So it's a way of wrapping it and making it digestible to people who don't quite understand the terminology, and also don't quite understand some of the practices. So it's making it accessible for all, but still interesting at every level. So even if you're advanced, you're getting something out of it. And even if you're just coming in, you can walk off and get something out of it. And I think with those conversations, it's quite inspiring for me as well, because when he's talking about, or they or she is talking about the different processes they're using, it's like a university course. Again, I'm getting paid to do this. And I'm like, wow, this is great. I'm going back in the studio tomorrow. No, actually, when I get in, and I'm going to use those concepts. So it's a wealth of these sort of chats and conversations. And as I said, it's just sitting around. And I think sometimes when the conversation is scripted with the questions, it's difficult. And when you've got these geeky creative types, as soon as you start a conversation, before you know it, you're 3 hours in.
I mean, for sure, that went on for a really good, decent length of time. But I was far from bored. And then when the track comes on, you can even stand up, and even though there was absolutely nobody there and the lights were on, did have a little dance as well.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And do you know what, as you said, I don't know why we don't do a lot more of that sort of stuff in Ibiza. Ibiza has been and is regarded as a hub of music. I'm not even going to say electronic music, because it transcends everything. So it's a hub for music. And these sort of things bring together interested people who are part of a community. And as I said, when you see Red Bull Music Academy, they do them in Amsterdam, they do them in Barcelona, you know, with the Sonars and the Mutex and all these sort of things. It's another way of enjoying and digesting music and the creative processes outside of just going to a club and having some fun and going crazy. And I think the island needs more of it. You know, I'd definitely be up for going for a lot more. And he said, have a little conversation, have a chat. Learning about the artist, learning about the process. And in an intimate setting, because you don't, every day, it's almost like you're having a conversation with them yourself. You don't get that every day. When you go to High or Yeshua or your Amnesia of the World, they're there on the stage. The stage is miles away. You're disconnected from the artist. But when you're in these small settings, you literally right in front of them. So you can sort of resonate with what the artist is about and the music and where they were going when they were making the music or creating the music or their inspirations, which I find inspiring. And I think these sort of things would be really, I said, I don't know why we don't do more over here, because there's an audience for it. But
for sure.
I enjoyed it. It was great. I had a good time doing that.
You left him quite drunk, though, and basically he was quite ridiculous in the interview that we had. And actually, he said to me, "I'm sorry, you can't put that out. We have to do it again." And I was like, "Well, listen, I can fly to where you live in Germany, no probs. Let's do it again." And eventually he was like, "I don't really have time. Let my manager have a look at it." But he said some quite ridiculous things that I had to actually chop out because he was necking the old beers when you two were sitting in that booth together.
Do you know what I said? Because sabotage, I knew you were coming up. She's not going to get a better interview than me. Joking aside, do you know what it was? As I said again, it's because I don't approach it as an interview. I approach it as just having a chat, getting together with a colleague or a friend or a fellow-minded creative, and just talking, just finding out what makes you tick, why you do this, and as a result, that sort of nice, familiar atmosphere and vibe. And you start drinking. It's like being in a pub or being in a restaurant or in a bar or something.
I know, actually, where is the drinks trolley, actually, Mick? Seeing as this is your studio, there should be a...
That's my day-to-day kombucha.
Well, I've got a pint of water and you've got a day-to-day kombucha.
Yes.
It's very rock and roll here.
I told you, wiser as you get older. So, but yeah, and it just becomes such a fun environment. And before you know it, you four or five drinks in and it's like, oh, wow. And that's when...
He's really on fire now.
Yeah, that's when the comedy gold comes out. You know.
I mean, he was. I mean, that's the one episode of Beatweiler that everyone's just like, he was a bit quirky, wasn't he? No shit.
Yeah, but it's. I suppose that's an old journalist trick, isn't it? A drink before the interview. You know.
Well, I think he's quite a shy guy, maybe just a little bit, because he's such a geek. So I think, like, to really express himself fully, maybe just having a couple of cheeky Estrella Dams was the kind of way to get him to be able to tap into that inner, you know, entertainer that he definitely became when I chatted to him. And he had a few elements of that in your conversation as well. So I found the whole thing absolutely brilliant. But then I'm a geek too, and I love those kinds of things. You've also been helping new artists. You did an event recently in London. Talk to us about that.
Oh, help musicians. Do you know what? So good to be involved with. Help musicians have been around for about 100 years. Which I found out. And basically their goal and drive is literally to help artists who haven't got that financial stability or the ability to make money but still realise their goals and dreams. And I think, you know, I've been in this, I keep saying 30 years, but it's longer than that. And I started when I was young. And it was a different time then, and that's when record labels had money and threw money around. It's gone now. So it's very hard for artists to be able to make a career out of what they do. So Help Musicians are there. It's a charity, basically, and you can write to them to get assistance in all avenues of, you know, the financial aspect of we need help, effectively. Mm-hmm. So... we've partnered up with them as DJ Mag and with this initiative and doing something around electronic music, because historically Help Musicians it's for the open industry music industry, so we wanted to sort of like channel it in and do something similar but for the electronic music audience at any age. Didn't really matter what if you were young or old, and the amount of applicants that came through was astonishing. And we had to whittle it down to 30, and I think we had to whittle it down from 300 to 30, if I remember rightly. So we had to decrease. But it was great to be invited along to, you know, listen to these artists and what they're making and creating, and get a feel for them as well. And part of the application was where we explained what the process and what they're doing and why they needed to, what they wanted to try and get this grant, and doing all that to help nurture the next generation, regardless of your age and your interests, and just putting something back and helping for the scene to continue to grow was just quite rewarding. Because I'll use a beef example. You see, we have a hub of music, but at times it's like you see all these DJs coming in playing these massive clubs, getting paid these massive fees, then off again. And where's the grassroots? Where's the support? And you need to put the support in to bring up this next generation to keep it going and keep it, to make it a continuous movement. Dance music scene's been around for pretty much close to 40 years, which is incredible, because when music scenes come through or fads or, you know, trends, they come and go. You know, you look at ska and punk, whilst they're still around in a more niche capacity, they started off small, underground, grew popularity and then disappeared again. Dance music scene is just growing and growing and growing and growing. And as a result, it's opened up avenues and doors to various different ways of working and ways of living within the industry. So we have to keep that alive and keep that going through. So anything that can help give back to this next generation coming through, I think is a worthy practice. So yeah, things like help musicians is just such a really good thing to be involved in. And we have to take that time out to give back, because, you know, if we don't, where's it going to come from? And there's other great causes doing something similar as well, you know, giving opportunities to people who have less opportunities than what we have had and what we've been afforded. So, you know, by being part of that, it was great. And some of the talent, again, some of the music you hear, it's like, wow, there's some amazing stuff being made. And these people need a chance to be heard or to play, to be seen, you know. So yeah, it was great. It was really, really good. And that's moving on now. So the next steps of that are coming through. So it's going to be really interesting and exciting to see. I'd just love to see the faces when these people get picked and, like, here you go. Now you can go and realise that. Because some of the stories why they applied was like, really, like, wow, you know, you deserve to get a leg up and a helping hand and to have some industry mentors bring you through. So yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing things like that.
I mean, it was all about MySpace, really, when I was working at BBC Six Music, when I was working as a music journalist. That was the number one way that we would find new music, new artists, good people to interview, and obviously check out, you know, just their latest releases. Or, you know, and I think things are, with the algorithms on Spotify and, you know, iTunes and all that, it's harder, I think, to find the really, really good new material, particularly living maybe in Ibiza as well, because there's not as many opportunities for people that are small and just starting out. I mean, it's all about the big guns and, you know, obviously earning lots of money in the big clubs that obviously need to be able to pay the bills. So it's a bit of a catch-22, I think, in terms of new music here or new artists.
Yeah, and it really is. And as I said, it's like, I'm not one to, oh, it was better in my day and all this and that. It was different in my day and things evolve. And I came here first at 89, I think. And again, it was a lot. We just turn up with record boxes, knock on the door, can we play? Yeah, come back later in the afternoon and speak to so-and-so. You come back and say, okay, yeah. And next day, there's a billboard. 2 days later, you're playing. Is that how it was? Now it's all planned and marketed and everything's too. But it's a business now. Now, then it wasn't a business. But you're right, there is so much money involved in it, and it's, as I said, it can be difficult for finding and discovering new acts, because a lot of these new acts start with nothing. And the creativity is there and the drive is there. There's no record shops. There used to be a record shop in Ibiza. There's no record shops, so you can't just go to a record shop and hang out.
There is. There's one in Sant Hilari called For the Record, which Beck has just created. Do you remember?
Yes, that's right. Yes, they had it up at Paradise Lost, that's next door to it. Was it last year or the year before? Oh, it's in Sant
Hilari. Just opened it.
Oh, brilliant. Well, this is what
Shout
we
out
need.
To you, Beck, if you're listening.
That was a good one. that's what we need, because when I started off, having a record shop was almost like a local sort of club where we'd all hung out, and, you know, youth exchange, we'd go in, someone would come in, you'd bump, you'd have a conversation with them, have you heard this, have you heard that? It's like, no. And you're constantly sharing and sharing and sharing. And we spent all day there. You'd go in the morning, go over White Label, the van guy would come up, you'd find your records, people come in, you'd bugger off for afternoon, have your lunch, and you come back again. But this is where you found out about new music. And as you said, the algorithms on Spotify and these channels are not really designed to find grassroots artists. You will find some new artists, but these new artists often, you said, got a label behind them and they're pushing, you know. So again, it's difficult. But then it was like you're literally finding out from the horse's mouth, off the street, where this new stuff's coming from. I think Bandcamp's still good at doing that, you know, and jump on board and you start off in one direction and go off another. But it's having those sort of like spaces where, see, internet's great and it gives you access to a lot of things, but you're isolated, you're sat at home. And one of these things said, being in the record shop, you're a community. And even as I said, AD is perfect for this, you're wandering around and, excuse me, you're going to a record shop, you're going to a clothes shop, and you're speaking to people who all basically been into music. And they're telling, have you heard this? Have you heard that? So you're discovering when you come back, and it's like, oh yeah, what was that? What was that? And that's how it grows fast. This is what Ibiza needs, more of that, more of those sort of community spots where you can feel part of a community and just have these conversations and meet people and discovery. There is an element to it, but it's just, it's not as prevalent as it could be or should be.
No, I totally agree. I mean, Harry Charles at Warm, I think, is doing some good things as well. You know, he's having little events there, or he's having, like, you know, new artists or up-and-coming DJs. People have just been learning to DJ, been playing there. And, you know, it's a really beautiful thing to have that community spirit. I think it's so important to connect people. As you said, you could sit at home all day long sharing tracks and links and, you know, pinging things via email and WhatsApp and whatever, but it's just not the same. And I just interviewed Andy Cato from Groove Armada on the latest episode of Beatweller, and he said that Tom actually went over to New York and went to A1 Records and came back with excess baggage, basically, because they need some new samples for some new material to actually try and release some new music on Defected. And it was a bit like, you know, why would you go all the way to New York to have to go to a decent record store? I mean, you know, he doesn't live here. Neither than they do. They live in England. But obviously there's some great record shops still in London. But, you know, from the days when I was working at Six Music, like, there was like, you know, what was that? Black Market Records. And Soho fantastic. Was like heaving with record shops. Oh, and it's just not like that anymore. It's all gone bougie and it's all been gentrified. And, you know, that real soulful music, creative, dirty, filthy, slightly wrongness of that area is just been polished up. And I'm not loving it.
Do you know what? That's, for me, that's almost like found sounds. Found sounds now is artists are going out into the environment and finding sounds. That whole thing about record shops and travelling, it made me laugh if you went to New York. One, it's just a cool place to go to anyway. And two, it's in the pursuit of work because you're going in research to find new sounds and record shops. And we used to do the same. We'd go over to Japan to a record shop, find a record shop in Tokyo or something. It's like, oh my God, the Holy Grail. You know, go over to New York, the Holy Grail, go to LA, and it's like the Holy Grail. I mean, people do the same. They'd come to London, as you said, to these shops, and it's like, wow. It's like, where are you from? Oh, we've flown in from LA, or we've flown in from, you know, another far off exotic location. It's like, oh wow. And again, then you start a conversation, and then it's like, what are you here for then? And it's like, oh, try and check out some new music, and then it grows. And as I said, that whole thing, it's very geeky. Again, it goes back to having geek, but it's fun. We've got geek and fun in there.
So, there you go. We've double whammy there. Yeah. You get 10 points for that.
Yeah. So, but as I said, it's that sort of community, and I love those days of, even when I'm travelling now, if I'm walking around Barcelona, or where was I the other week? I can't even remember where I was. Oslo or Norway or something like that. I'm just walking around the streets and I see this little weird spot, and it's a little record shop, and it's like, oh, what's in here? And automatically you peeked and you're going in and you're spending time, and before you know it, another 2-3 hours are gone. But then you're picking up these gems and you think, oh wow. And that whole thing is, it's an exciting journey. I'm smiling when I'm talking about it. It's fun. You know, when you go back, even on your own, and you finish your little gold mining expedition, and you go to the little coffee shop or the restaurant or the cafe, having a little coffee and your little snacking, and you're just going through your goodies. Oh, I wonder what this one sounds like. Or, yeah. And, you know, going through it. I think that's part of a love of being a music collector or passionate about music, and a DJ and also a creative, because he said, as a producer, going to get these sounds and samples, you're finding something new to put into music or into your music and give it a different edge. Because sample packs and, you know, online again, there's a myriad of resources where you can find samples and sounds. But there's something about finding something on a record, on a piece of music that could be so obscure, but then also where you work it in then becomes this massive big groove mod, classics of that, and even the normal cooks of the world, finding these obscure samples and then become household big hits. And it's like, everyone's like, oh, this is a normal cook show, that's a groove mod. So it's like, actually, that original is from this.
Well, maybe we need to pop over to the record shop in Centralia and do a little event there or something and support Beck somehow, because I think, you know, it's not just about the community, but I think it's like the physical sensation of touch and, you know, like actually flicking through those sleeves and kind of the visual element as well of connecting and, like, you know, just sticking a USB in and just, like, you know, sliding down the old roller. Just, it just doesn't have the same, you know. Of course, I just sound like a right analog kind of like old dinosaur. And of course, you know, I used to splice tape up when I was at university. I did my first broadcast course. But it's like, you know, of course, times have changed. It's not saying that way back then it was better, but, you know, it's a bit like going from reading a book to going on a Kindle.
Yeah.
It's just not the same, is it? You've got the white light. You've got the kind of like just the detachment, I think, from the physical entity, and the two things just don't quite have the same sensation somehow.
No, they don't. It's, as I said, for me, that whole process, it's like the art of ceremony. It's like, you look at the tea making ceremony, the Japanese tea making ceremony, everything is a fine detail. And that's so similar to when you're, as I said, flicking through that record, picking up, even smelling that record. Everyone smells a piece of vinyl before you put it on.
Yeah. Or a book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's got a distinctive character and that smell, and the way you handle it. It's a ceremony to it all, and where you put it down and then listen to it, and where you even place a needle on, always said flick through the pages. Everything's got its place, you know. I'm not a purist. I said, if I'm playing out USB and audio and digital is the way to go. If I'm playing something a bit more discerning and bespoke, it's like it's vinyl and turntables and amazing sound. Again, I enjoy the process and enjoy that ceremony of it all, and even to the prep of it all, it's a total different process again. And yeah, I miss that. A lot of people miss that, and I think the scene misses that, because sometimes it's a bit sterile, because it said it's easy to get a USB, 1,000 tracks, roll through it and just pick, hear something and pick it. Whereas I think that whole process of, you know, pulling out the record from the sleeve, flipping it round, doing the motions, even the sort of the muscle memory of what you're doing with your hands when you're holding the record in between the grooves of your palm so you don't get your fingers on it and stuff like that, and the way you put it down and place it on and then pick up the needle and all that sort of thing, it's a process, but it's a satisfying process. And even when you sat at home with friends and like, check this out, and you're putting that record on, and instead going down to Beck's new shop and doing something similar, but it's the process of it all, which can be, again, this is what I'm saying with digital internet, in this day and age, you're very sat at home on your own, flicking through. So you miss some of that edge.
I mean, it really made me chuckle when Danny Snagler said at Space that he got up onto the decks and then basically someone had, like, pinched the needle. So he didn't have one to actually play anything. And I think they had to go and source one sharpish from somewhere next door. It really made me chuckle. Or the fact that, you know, suddenly you look up at the decks to see the DJ and he's not there. And it's like, where the fuck's he gone? And then it's like, oh yeah, he's squatting down on the floor, like looking through his records. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't happen anymore, does it? They're always up there kind of like showboating and normally kind of like dancing as well, which I also think is really weird when DJs these days, like, so there's like some DJs that you see on Instagram, they've got like a full-blown dance routine and they're like, you know, they're like these amazing bodies and they're like actual dancers.
I suppose one of the things about it's like technology, back in the old days you couldn't dance in a DJ booth because you had that needle would jump across the whole record, so you couldn't jump up or down and, you know, throw your hands up ecstatically in the air and just go crazy if you just don't care, a little rat bear.
Please continue.
Yeah. So
what else you got for us?
Yeah. That's all you're getting. So it was just one of those. I think it's one of those sign of the times. And he said you should duck behind the booth and you're flicking through your records. And that was also when he took a breather. So you'd sit down there, so you disappear from view. Everyone's dancing to music, but didn't care. But the minute it's time to put up, you either walked from the back of the room, because your records was often you had to turn your back to get to the record box, which is where you put your records in. So there was less time being face on with a crowd. Mm. Now with a USB stick, you're constantly face on with a crowd.
Which I would I would personally just really hate. Mm. And in fact, I had my very, very, very first in the booth experience the other week at High and with Danny Tenaglia. And I just hated it. I was like standing there and like about 5,000 faces were staring back at me. Yeah. And it was just like, this is just really odd. Actually, this is like literally my worst nightmare. And I couldn't leave then because I'd already entered and said hello. And it would have been rude to walk out halfway through a set. But it was just like, oh gosh, if this is what DJs face on the daily, it's just like mental. It was ramajammed.
But saying that, this new generation of DJs, not even a new generation, some of these old generation have evolved with it. So it's just part and parcel of what's expected now. But as Danny said, actually, you picked up on this in the old, in your, when you did the podcast, was a DJ booth years ago used to be in the corner. Mm. The floor was the dominant area. Mm. And the DJ booth could have been lofted up high and no one could see them. So you're on the floor, everyone was in different directions. It was only when taken from like a festival style setup where the booth became the centre of attraction.
Look at Tomorrowland.
Started, yeah, exactly. Where people started to sort of like pay focus on that and all eyes forward. Mm. Whereas in previous times, everyone was looking at each other, engaged in circles, in things, in things. You weren't all lined up in a row looking forward. But as I said, it's the evolution of the way things have gone. But yeah, that whole ducking behind the booth. In fact, ducking behind the booth is great. You just get all sorts of mischief when you duck behind the booth.
Of course. And your little stash of contraband in the bottom of the record box.
Yeah, technology gear.
Oh, yes. High tech down there.
Yeah. So, it was the escape.
And then the DJ sort of pops up like a jack-in-the-box with a maniacal look in his eyes.
Like
what could he have been doing down there? I wonder. Yeah. And who was he down there with?
Having a sandwich, yeah.
A little bit of intercourse.
Yeah.
The moment before the breakdown. Yeah. Or the moment that caused the breakdown.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But yeah, we're going back to the whole dumping around behind the DJ box.
What have you been up to behind the DJ booth? I'd quite like to hear a story. Come on, Mick, give us a good one.
I couldn't say.
Is that how you got the title Head of Gear?
Probably. Put it this way, all those things that people say can happen, does happen. Yeah. And even at times you actually astounded and shocked yourself by, did that just happen? It's like, yeah, happened. It's like, okay, yeah. But then it comes the norm. It's like, oh, okay. When it doesn't happen, it's something wrong. It's like, oh, what's not happening? Probably when you're not a popular DJ anymore. So, the booth used to be the area of fun, but you can't get away with that now, especially in terms of the fact that, as you said, going in for booth now, you get that boiler room experience where half a club is actually behind you and the other half is actually in front of you. And it's, for me personally, it's, I always said, like, if you're worked in an office, it's, imagine like you're there, sat at your desk and you've got a whole gang of people behind you. It's very distracting. And when I play, I find it very distracting when non-essential people are in the DJ booth. Whilst it can create an atmosphere and elements of fun, I just find it very, I'm trying to focus and be in the moment about the music and what's coming up. So if someone's barging or jumping or banging around next to me, I'll find it difficult. Not that it doesn't look like fun. At times I've seen some sets where everyone seems to be having a great, great time with it. But and whilst I have friends in the booth and stuff and you can be having a laugh, I just think that element of having half a club behind you is just like a bit full on.
Mm. I mean, I almost got taken out actually by the kind of like steamroller of humans that entered the DJ booth after Danny's set ended the other day. I won't name the DJ, but I was like, holy crap, like literally I got physically barged out of the way by a kind of harem of women. It was like insane, actually. I was very intimidated and slightly like perturbed. It left me in a bit of a funk, and I had to actually kind of like leave the building after that.
It becomes a fight, really. As I said, it's, I find it very, very intense. The other thing of being a DJ is also, and behind stage, it gives you, affords you some space. Whereas on the dance floor, you're cramped in. So that was one of my sort of refuges to get away from the maddening crowd. So for all of a sudden to be in a space which was your space, and you could like take a breather and do whatever you wanted to do, you got the madness of a crowd descending on you. It's like, ooh, I'm feeling a bit claustrophobic again now. So, but hey, some people love it.
The Refuge of the Booth. That could be a great podcast series title.
It did, actually. Oh, yeah, I think we've found something there.
I think we might have struck some gold. Yeah. It's very cold in here, actually. I'm starting to get goose pimples. Your air con is incredible in this studio that you guys have created.
Yes, the humidity of Ibiza doesn't work with equipment, so you have to have this really ambient temperature just to make sure everything's keeps working, to be honest.
I think if you touch my thigh, you might actually wonder if I was still alive.
Oh yeah, the feeling of that, I was thinking we're gonna have some fun, aren't we? Starting touching thighs.
Hang on a minute, I withdraw that statement fully. It's very dark in here as well, actually. I wish I'd never mentioned it.
It's consenting adults, so yeah.
A bit of necrophilia.
We're going dark and deep here now, aren't we?
Oh, it's all going wrong. Who have you actually had in here then this summer? Which big stars have come in here and taken over the airwaves?
There's been quite a lot, actually. Louis Vega comes in very regularly. He's in quite a lot. Joseph Capriati's been coming in.
Do you think he looks a bit like Mike Henderson? I said that today. That's sort of like doppelgangers. I saw a clip of Joseph in here doing something, and I was like, "Oh, it's Mike." And then I looked a bit closer, and I was like, "No, it's Joseph."
Potentially, if you've got challenging eyesight.
I have, actually. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out.
Who else have we had?
I didn't really see it.
Do you know, we had a lot of people. I think Jamie's been in.
Jones.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he has. Idris used to come in quite a lot. I think he might still.
Oh, God. Get him back. I'd love to see Idris Elba. I'm slightly in love with him. Can you tell?
Yeah. I saw your mind light up when I said his name.
I never saw him at Pikes, actually. Never. And I think, what's his face, is about to come back for Mondays for a short spell.
Harvey.
DJ Harvey. Yeah. Are you going to go to that?
If I'm here. I've sort of been on and off the island quite a bit recently, I will try and make it, because it's always a good party. And again, in terms of music and the people who go, it's a different crowd, a crowd who's still, as I said, back to that discovery thing. You don't never know what you're going to hear. You're always going to hear something like, "Oh, what's that?"
Is everybody on Shazam because they're not allowed to film in there anymore?
Probably not even allowed on Shazam.
No phones.
Yeah. Probably. Sneaky little Shazam moment.
I've never met DJ Harvey, but I've always wanted to go and see him, and I'd quite fancy that. But you know, Monday just feels like a bit of a school night for me.
Do you know what, when you live on the island, it is and the whole week becomes, it's a working week, and sometimes you get sort of, I was going to say FOMO, or annoyed that everyone's like, "Oh, we're part of your party," and it's like, it's Monday, it's I've got to get up on a Tuesday morning. I mean, you get up on a Tuesday morning, you drive around and you're seeing people coming home, people enjoying themselves, and you're just, "Oh, I've got to go to work." Downside.
What, doing your
paradise.
Awful job that you've just been basically telling us about, that sounds unbelievably amazing. 99.999% of the population would give their right arm to do what you do.
Yeah, I've got to go to another club.
I'm one of them, by the way.
DJ, and yeah.
God. Awful business.
Woe betide me.
I mean, actually, like, listening to Mike talking the other day about, you know, being sort of like a stand-in tour manager for quite a few gigs this year, and you look at him, and he's like, he actually looked like a dead person about 2 weeks ago, and I was like, "Mike, mate, you okay?" And he was just like caught some. Well, he thought he had a tequila hangover, but it turned out to be some sort of evil bug, and he just looked a bit grey for about 3 weeks.
Well, do you know what? My new mantra is sleep is your best friend, and when you start, when you have to go to the clubs. In the UK, clubs used to open at 11, and for some reason, I still haven't got that out of my mind. Mm. Someone said, "Oh, you're going to have to go to a club and check out or hang out or do something." I'm like, "Okay, 11 o'clock, can be back by 1, 2. Yeah, it's not bad. A few 4 hours." And it's like, no, we don't start till 1. I'm like, 1?
Forget it.
What 1? So when's the headline on? 4:05.
I'm in my REM by then.
Yeah, it's like 4:05. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't ever commit to any, like, if I interview someone, I'm like, yeah, I would love to come see you play later. Like, what kind of time is that?
Yeah.
And actually, Henrik Schwarz, I interviewed him the other day, and I was like, really want to go and see him. If he's on at 4 or 5, it's just an absolute flat no. But he was on at 1 a.m. and I still didn't go, and I felt really rude.
Well, as I said, sleep's your best friend, and you soon forget in the height of the summer you start getting sleep deprivation because you're just out and about. You get in, you have a little bit of sleep, you've got to do your normal day to day. You may be playing, you may be travelling, you know, his deadlines. Even my studio sessions suffer in the summer because I just can't get into the studio to work, to do the creative side of things, because the other side of stuff's going on. And then when you get a moment, you're trying to plan for, okay, I've got to go to that venue, I've got to do this, or I've got to speak to that person, or, you know, it gets quite intense. And I said, as I've got wiser, I realise sleep is literally my best friend. I love sleep.
Me too. I'm totally with you. I've had literally none of it this week. I don't know why. I just haven't been able to sleep. I think my circadian rhythm is just so disturbed and here, there and everywhere that I just, when I do try to go to sleep, it's not even happening. I'm getting like 3 or 4 hours a night tops at the moment.
Yeah, and you know when that deprivation comes in, when you're walking around in the daytime and you hear the whispers and the noises and you're looking over the shirt and you're starting to jitter and the coffee, it just adds to that feeling of,
No, I'm sort of in that hole around about now, actually. I'm quite looking forward to just... Well, I'm actually going to the Oasis Festival next week to hopefully go and see Laurent Garnier. That's the master plan. But I'm actually almost thinking I don't even want to go to the festival. I just want to go to Morocco and lie on a sun lounger in a Riyadh somewhere with a pina colada.
Yeah, and sleep.
And sleep, exactly.
I'm looking forward to that.
We are definitely getting old, Mr. Mick.
Oh my God, we were meant to be talking about the fun of the clubs and the crazy.
I know. Hang on a minute. We've got really deteriorated. Gone downhill.
Like, sleep. Yeah. Oh, sunshine and sleep.
Well, it's a terrible life. I mean, you know, it's a tough life. I'm sure everybody's hearts are bleeding back home listening to this absolute load of old codswallop that we've been just walloping on for like 51 whole minutes.
Yeah, indeed. But, you know, it's still fun. You know, I still love it, still enjoy it. And I'd say, has the passion waned? No, it hasn't. Passion for staying up late nights has waned. But you get the beauty of your Mutex and your sonars, where it's all about daytime clubbing and daytime music. And it's like, you know, you're laughing when you're entering because you know you're going to be out of there by 12 o'clock. You've heard a good 10 hours of good music. And you're still laughing because you're getting up early and still feeling fresh. And I've dodged the bullet on everything.
That is basically living the dream right there.
Yeah.
Daytime partying. Yeah. I mean, well, that was, you know, when that's why I loved space so much. I think a lot of people did for that exact reason. It was sometimes extremely empty at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Yeah. It was all about the Ramode Terrace that was absolutely packed to the rafters, in the daytime, because people were quite intelligent as well as discerning in their musical taste. Yeah. They were also quite like the people that wanted to actually get things done and have a nice holiday and get some rest.
Yeah, and as I said, doing it that way, you just feels like a win-win. Everything's a win-win then. When you're getting at 12 and you're laughing because you've dodged it and you know you've dodged it and you know you're going to get a few good hours of sleep, and you wake up in the morning and you think, oh yes, I had a great day, great night, and I feel great today. Yeah, perfect.
Who's your dream interview before you die? Who's on your bucket list? Is there somebody that you like really want to like get that little moment together with, or in the studio, or get here in your studio?
Do you know what? That's such a good question. It's a very difficult one to answer. Do you know what? Why? Just out of the fact that they were such a musical force, I'd say Prince. Prince would have been great.
You can't have dead people in here. We've gone down that road before. I'm almost dead, but I'm still warm.
We're in Ibiza. We can raise the dead in Ibiza. I'm pretty sure there's a shaman or two who could do
that. I'm sure there's one in the hills of San Juan.
Yeah, somewhere.
raising something.
Definitely.
Erased, ideally.
Do you know what? It's really difficult. Ooh, someone alive. I'm going to have to ring up and on...
Phone a friend.
Yeah, or go gatecrash in one of your sessions and she's like, oh, I know now. I'm going to have to come back to you on that one.
Okay, give us a tinkle when you're ready.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. That's a cop-out, isn't it?
Well, Well, you know, I just thought you might have had somebody on the old tip of your tongue.
Do you know what? I had a great interview with Honey Dijon the other day.
You interviewed Honey Dijon? She's like literally at the top of my list at the moment. I can't get an interview for Love Nor Money. When did you do that?
The other day we got in the magazine.
She's got a new album.
Oh yeah, she has, yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous. I hate you now. But unless you can introduce me to Honey.
Probably.
We could be friends again.
Yeah. No, it was really
good. How was it?
Oh, do you know what? It was one of those where you know your time. If you do half an hour, that's a lot of content. If you get to an hour, that's a lot of content. And then you start thinking, oh God, I've got to transcribe this all.
And then work out which bits to use. Yeah. And cut it all down. Yeah. It's a disaster.
So that becomes a day's length of work. When you get to almost over an hour, it's like, oh my God. But the conversation...
I'm going to write a book.
Yeah. The conversation was so good, you just didn't want it to stop.
Are you just like, you're just boasting. You're just rubbing it in now. And we just like spoke for days. We just got some club sandwiches delivered.
Yeah, we had stopped for a cup of tea and, you know, the whole verse.
But, we even had a snooze together.
Yeah, it was so, so insightful, but it was great. And, you know, again, it's... Sometimes you come off the back of these conversations and you feel so inspired, and hearing the anecdotes and the stories and, you know, the discovery. Picking up things that you wouldn't necessarily know, little details.
Is this in audio form?
Oh, I've got it on audio, but no. It's been made into print. It's online as well. DJ Mag.
Can I listen to the audio one day? I promise not to do anything with it.
A listening session.
Ooh, there you go. Now you're talking.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting concept, isn't it? Listening session of interviews.
Well, that is exactly what I'm going to start on doing on Monday with Beatweller. That's so funny that you said that. Well, to be continued.
Come round.
Do you want to come?
Yeah, come round the house, yeah. We'll have a listening session.
Okay, done.
To the interviews. I've got
well, then you can pour me a drink as well.
Yeah.
Seeing as you only brought kombucha for one today. I mean, unbelievable. And now you're having a coughing fit on my podcast. Yeah.
God.
Try not to die. There's a lot of death talk in the studio today.
There is, yes. It's dark and deep.
I think that's a good place to finish, actually, before it gets any deeper and darker.
Yeah. We can raise the dead.
There's still time.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Thanks for being on. I mean, yeah, it's been great. And now I feel like I know you a little bit better. Normally I just sort of see you in passing or for the odd tequila at the bar at one of our wonderful hub community lunches.
Yeah, do you know what? It's always so... It's one of those things where you're in a social space. Ibiza's a very social space. But at the same time, it's very hard to be social at times because... Everybody is running off in different directions, getting pulled left, right and centre. Mm. And finding that moment to actually sit down and having a conversation or catching up can prove very difficult.
Agreed. So we've gold star for you and gold star for me.
Yeah, we've done it. Thank you.
It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.